Welcome to Feels Like Healing, a series of conversations between myself, Al Lewis, and individuals who have turned to creativity as a way of helping them heal. Our need for healing is universal, however, the reasons behind it can be oh so varied. A difficult childhood, a traumatic experience, or perhaps a bereavement and our need to process grief. My search for healing stems from the death of my dad, who died when I was 21 from multiple sclerosis. I believe that hearing other people's stories can help us to process ours, and that the act of being creative can help turn something seemingly hopeless and incomprehensible into something beautiful and hopeful. These conversations are here to provide solace and inspiration, and to show you that healing can happen when we take our deepest pain and turn it into a work of art. This is Feels Like Healing. My guest this week on Feels Like Healing is the saxophonist, composer, and educator from Detroit, Michigan, Marcus Elliott. Marcus is the current director of the University of Michigan's Creative Arts Orchestra, and his compositions and improvisations have been described by the New York Times as convincing and confident and involved in touch and tone. And the Detroit Free Press has said that Marcus Elliott represents the next generation of jazz. Last year, Marcus experienced several pivotal life-changing moments in quick succession. His first child, a son, had been born in the spring when he received the news from his mother that his father had been put into a hospice. And not long later after that, he would sadly pass away. So Marcus turned to his art and created a piece of work entitled Fill the Room with Light. And this is where I discover this piece and discover Marcus's story of using his art and his music as a way of processing and coming to terms with the loss of his dad. I'm delighted to say that Marcus is joining me today all the way from Detroit. Hi, Marcus. How are you?
Hey, doing good. Doing good. Happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you on the podcast. So we've alluded to the fact that you created this beautiful piece, Fill the Room with Light, about your dad. But if we take things a bit further back, perhaps you could tell us a bit about when creativity first came into your life, and was it the saxophone or was it something else? And when did you first get that creative bug?
Yeah, very young. As early as I can remember, I've been making music, or, you know, I remember being 4 years old. My parents gave me a little Casio piano and I would sit there and just press the keys and put sounds together and try and play commercials that I heard on TV. And I just spent a lot of time with it. And yeah, I just knew I wanted to continue to do that. And I wrote my first song when I was like 5 or 6 or something like that. You know,
remember it?
Oh yeah, I still got it. My mom asked me to play it all the time. She loves it. It's her favorite song. So yeah, at a really early age, you know, it was pretty clear to me that this was what I was wanted to do.
Did you feel like it was a possible career? Did you think that could be your future life?
I was really into Michael Jackson as a kid, and I just knew I was like, I think I whatever that is, like, I want to do something kind of like that, you know. And it was either going to be that or an astronaut. Like, those were my two options. It's either going to be Michael Jackson or astronaut. And I guess I fell somewhere in between that, I guess. But maybe not so much the astronaut part. But yeah, so, you know, I don't know if, you know, in terms of career, you know, I was a kid. I wasn't really thinking about career or nothing. I was just wanting to make music.
So I suppose when you were making decisions about life, I guess when you turned 16, 17, are you already in that frame of mind?
Yes.
I assume by then the saxophone has come into your life. It's not just the Casio keyboard.
That's right. Basically, I started playing the saxophone when I was 11. I started that, was actually supposed to get my saxophone on 9/11. But ended up getting it a week afterwards because everything, you know, was so crazy. So yeah, you know, that was kind of a pivotal moment to receive that instrument. It felt like it was such a charged moment, and then to be given a saxophone in that time and to start making music from that place, that's just something I always keep in mind. You know, I wasn't very conscious of it when I was 11, you know, I wasn't super like aware of what was going on, you know, or the importance of receiving such an important gift at that time. But that's how it kind of happened for me. So, yeah.
Where were you headed after making the decisions of like school and stuff? Did you think you wanted to go study music, I take it, somewhere?
Yeah, it was pretty clear. I mean, you know, it's just what I did, you know, like there just wasn't really, you know, I did some sports and things like that and maybe could have done some college stuff with that. But it was just pretty clear that like my talents lied in music. And if I was going to go to school, that's what was going to take me there. So, yeah, I just leaned into it and it took me to school.
Composition, was that a huge part of your life at that point, or is that something that came later on?
Yeah, no, composition's been, like I said, since the beginning, like writing music. I mean, I honestly think of myself more as a composer than a saxophonist, just because I've been composing longer than I've been playing the saxophone, you know? But you know, the saxophone is a very, it's what people see, and it's how I express myself, you know? So
after graduating from college, where does life take you then? And where does your music take you then?
Well, my life takes me, you know, after I graduated, I was at Michigan State University, and basically, you know, it was like, okay, New York, New York, New York. That was kind of what everybody was supposed to do. You know, it's like you go there, then you go to New York. And as that time started getting closer, I was like, I just don't think that this is the right move for me for a lot of different reasons. But something was calling me to be in Detroit. Now, I didn't grow up in Detroit proper. I grew up about an hour away in the suburbs. But I always spent a lot of, you know, all my family lived in Detroit. So I was always in and out of Detroit. And it was when I was making music, it was in Detroit. So, you know, and there was also kind of a little bit of a buzz happening in Detroit at this time as well. You know, it was just like a lot of really good art happening there. So, and I needed to heal, man. I was really burnt out after school. You know, I needed some time. I needed some space. I moved to Detroit, just took a lot of time to work on my craft, start exploring not just my music, but myself, who I am as a person. And then also travel. I got it, you know, because it was so inexpensive to live there. It allowed me to do a lot of traveling. So traveled around the United States, but also abroad to different places. Spent some time in South Africa. Spent some time in Indonesia. Spent some time in Egypt.
Were you playing music in these places?
I was. Yeah, I was playing music. Yep.
Cool.
Yep. I was playing music with a trumpet player. It was a program that we did. It's called American Music Abroad, basically. And it sent our group, it was like basically we're like an ambassador of music for the US. So they would send us to these different countries and we would hang out there for weeks at a time and collaborate with musicians and then come home.
And then we come to, am I right, about 2017 when your dad has a stroke?
That's correct.
What impact did that have on you and your family when that happened?
Massive, massive impact. At this time I had gone back to do my master's at the University of Michigan because they offered me an assistantship. So I took them up on that. And I remember it was after my first year, I did like a little mini recital with the string quartet. It was maybe just a few days after that, that my mom called me and was like, there is something really wrong with your dad and I don't know what's going on. He's just acting really strange. And so I came, I remember I drove over there and I came and I was talking to him and he was just real spaced out. Like he was still able to talk and stuff, but just really just spaced out. So I said, Dad, I think we need to go to the emergency room. And he was like, okay. You know, he didn't even say anything. And so he went to the emergency room and, you know, they ran tests and they were like, okay, your father has had a stroke. We started rehab then, but then very soon after that, maybe about a month or so after that, he had another stroke. And that one was mad. That was a big one. That was a massive one. And it took away his speech. It took away his, it took away his ability to walk, a lot of his mobility. And it basically, he needed 24-hour care And my mom tried to do it for a while. We tried to do it for a while, but then it just came to a point where it was too much. We had to, you know, we had to take him to an assisted living place. So yeah, I mean, to answer your question, it changed everything. It changed everything. Changed my trajectory.
I was gonna say, did it change your relationship with music and your relationship with your composing?
Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, well, I mean, first of all, it just, you know, when you're going through something like this, and you know about this, when you go through something like this, there's a certain level of selflessness that's necessary because the person needs so much care and so much attention. So a lot of my, I think any of my adolescence that was holding on was slowly being removed, slowly dying away by going through this. And so there was a maturity that was happening. Mm-hmm. With that, there was also a maturity that was happening with my relationship to the music. And my father was a big part of like me getting into music because he was a huge jazz head. He loved jazz, had okay. a bunch of jazz records. I have his records downstairs right now. And it was like basically the beginning seeds of my record collection or record addiction, I should really say. But yeah, it was the beginnings of that, you know. So music was how we connected. Mm-hmm. And so when he lost his ability to speak, music was a way that we could relate to one another. Mm-hmm. Whether that was through listening to music or that was through me playing.
So would you go to the home and play for him?
Exactly. Yep. That's how I would go. I would go there and I would play for him, or we would listen to music together. And there would be a lot of just, I mean, that's like I said, that's how we communicated. That's how a lot of things were communicated between me and him during that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
It's amazing, isn't it? The power of music, how it can transcend words sometimes.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's greater than words, you know? People try and, I don't, you know, people try and say that music is like a language. I get why people say that, because it's a good way to try and explain it to someone who doesn't know much about music. But I think musicians and people who have experienced music on a deep level know that it's a very watered down way to think about music. You know, thinking of it as a language is actually a disservice. It's much greater than that, you know? It's much greater than that. Because it taps us into the unknown. And what a gift that is, you know? It's a real gift to be able to tap into that space. And it's a portal in that way.
So if we fast forward a couple of years, then your dad's been in this assisted living home for a few years. And mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier this several pivotal moments happening to you in quick succession. You had your first child, a son, am I right?
That's
just
right.
Just been born in the spring.
Elijah. Yep. We were buying a new home. I got the keys to the house on April 21st. My wife went into labor that night. Elijah came April 22nd. That evening, I was on the phone with the movers telling them where to take our boxes from our old apartment into our new home. And then a few days later, I take my new family into our new home for the first time. My first time walking into the home as the homeowner. Elijah's first time in any building outside of the hospital. And same thing with my wife, her first time really being in that space. So she went into labor in our old apartment, and then we had an extra person when we came to our house.
Quite a whirlwind 48 hours, I'm sure.
Yeah. I wouldn't recommend it. I'll say that if you can separate those two things, do it.
Am I right in saying then you were commissioned, or you'd just recently been commissioned to write a new piece, right?
So if we fast forward about a year here, there's an ensemble here called New Music Detroit. They're like a new music ensemble. They commission a lot of different composers, usually are kind of coming out of the classical realm, but not necessarily specifically that, just folks that are writing new, interesting music. Mm-hmm. And they have a very interesting instrumentation. So anyways, I've always been a fan of theirs and have always wanted to write something for them. And then they reached out to me. And I was like, wow, I was, you know, just like, of course, I would love to do something. And I told them, I was like, okay, if I'm going to do something, because it was kind of a short period of time. It was like basically I think they asked me, oh, I want to say they maybe asked me in March, and then we agreed on what we would do in May, and then the piece was going to be performed in September. So I only had a few months there to really write this piece. So I remember I was downstairs in my basement. I was working on the music, and I was doing that for about a week. And then my mother calls me and says, hey, your father, his health is beginning to really starting to decline fast. He's not eating. He's, you know, and he's just sleeping a lot. And I was like, okay, you know, and I was like, yeah, let's see. Cause you know, she has said that before and nurses said that before, and then he bounces right back. But when I went to go see him, I was like, oh, okay, this is different. This is different. So yeah, that's kind of how that came to be.
It wasn't a case that you'd been thinking about writing a piece about your dad. It was more a case that this work was on your table and this thing was happening in your life at the same time.
Exactly.
Am I right in saying that in this case, life became art and art became life?
I mean, that's in every case, you know, for me, yeah. That's in every case. Like there's not really any separation. You know, like whenever I'm writing anything, I always try and let people know, like, you know, it's when I get commissioned to write something, it's like, I can't really tell you what it's going to be about until it's done. Just simply because when I've tried to do that before, when I've tried to be like, okay, we're going to write, it's going to be on this thing. And then I try and go in and write it. But my life puts me in a completely different space that has nothing to do with that. And the music that comes from me is from my life. Mm-hmm. So I really try not to force that sort of thing.
And you're grappling with new parenthood as well at the same time.
Exactly. That was a big thing too. I had a 1-year-old at home, you know.
That's pretty tough, I can tell you from three kids and
you know exactly what I'm talking about, man.
Yeah.
Man, that's a psychedelic experience having a 1-year-old around. Not sleeping and crying but all, you know, all the joy and love and all that stuff is crazy. So yeah, all that's going on, you know, all of that's going on. To me, that's how I write music, and this was no exception, you know. Even when I found out he was sick, I still wasn't sure what this piece was going to be about. I just knew that I had to keep showing up and writing. And every morning I'd get up, I'd spend about 1 to 2 hours in the morning, take a break, and then spend another maybe 1 or 2 hours in the afternoon, and then I would be done. And it was very therapeutic, you know. It was a very therapeutic thing for me to be able to get up there and just go into that space of creation and just kind of get out what was there. And not necessarily, like I said, I wasn't trying to think of this as like, oh, I'm writing this for my father, or I'm writing this for this moment. I was just writing the thing that I kept asking myself was, what sounds good? Mm-hmm. And then I would write that. And then I would say, okay, what sounds good? And I'd write that. And I just kept asking myself that question until I was done.
Do you think it was a way of you parking your thoughts about your dad and your worries and having a bit more of a freedom in your headspace to just think about the music?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if it was necessarily compartmentalized in that way.
Yeah. How many months into the project was it before your dad passed away?
He passed July 28th and I finished the piece August 1st.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So there was, I suppose, a real poignancy to finishing the piece then, if it was a few days after he passed.
And once it was done, I said, okay, I think I know what this is about. I think I have an idea of what this music is about now.
Yeah. Did you have a chance to communicate with him about what you were working on? Obviously, I know you said he lost the ability to talk, but...
Yeah, but he could hear, though. He could,
yeah.
He could talk.
Did you go in those last few visits... Talk to him.
I did. I talked to him a lot. I don't know. I'm trying to remember now. I feel like I'd never really even brought up the piece. I was playing for him a lot.
Yeah.
And we were listening to music. Yeah. I don't know. I think there was a part of me that was like, the piece was obviously important, but there were just other things that I was like, that I wanted to do with those last few moments with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe having him listen to that through like MIDI instruments and stuff, yeah. I felt like if I would have done that in my head, I was like, if I would have done that when he wasn't sick, he'd be like, what the heck is this? Like, what's going on here? All these like squeaky ass sounds coming through the, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that was a part of it. I didn't want to, you know, it was a very, those last few days with him were so precious and so sacred that I was very conscious of what I was bringing into the space. And bringing in a laptop with a screen and playing some sounds that, you know, it's like, not necessarily, that this isn't necessary, but me playing my saxophone, me singing to him, us listening to music, us listening to like Nancy Wilson and Cannonball Adderley, like that to me was like what I wanted to do, you know?
And do you feel like you got that moment, you got that time with him to do those things that were important and to share those things that you bonded over?
Of course. I mean, I don't know what your story is, Al, but I know most people do not get a chance to say goodbye. And I felt like I just was given such a gift because I got to spend so much time with him. I got to be there when he passed, you know, I got to hold his hand while he was leaving. I felt like the whole experience, honestly, I received such a potent gift from him during that time that I still carry to this day, and it still blesses me to this day. Yeah, I mean, I just learned so much. I mean, the way that we pass, the way that we go, the way that we leave this earth, it matters, you know, it really does. It matters to the people that are close to us, and it makes me want to, well, it doesn't make me, it has made me live my life in a way as if it matters, you know, because you just never know. You know, I was fortunate enough to be given a heads up.
Yeah.
But we all know that nothing is promised. Nothing is promised. And that's the grief of life, you know? That's the grief. Every time I look at my son, and you know this as being a father too, like there's so much love, but with that love, there's a deep pain for me because I know that he's two right now, he's not going to be two any much longer. Like every day he's growing. Every day the last part of him is dying. And it hurts me so much because it's so freaking cute and I don't want it to go, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want it to leave. But then something else comes in that's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And then I get attached to that and then that begins to die off. So, you know, that's what love is. That's what love is, you know? Love is grieving. It's grieving because you care so much for that person, you don't want them to go. You don't want them to change because you love them. You want to be in it forever, but you know you can't. So you grieve. That's why we grieve.
Yeah.
I've gained a new appreciation to grief and I keep it close because, you know, some people think it's something you're supposed to work through and I don't think that's what it is. I think it's a skill. I think it's a skill set. I think it's something that allows you to love very deeply, to live your life with a broken heart, just keeps getting broken over and over and over. That's what it's about. Because how else is your heart going to grow if it doesn't break? That's what it is for me.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Beautifully said, Marcus. So we come to the point, your dad has passed away and you have this piece of work that you've sort of had an epiphany over and realized what it's about. How do you then go to putting that piece into the public realm and performing it with that extra added weight of knowing why you've come to this point with this work and knowing that you're going to have to be in the part of the performance performing this piece? How did that feel? It's a big weight.
Yeah, you know, I'd say the hardest part was posting about it on Instagram and Facebook. That was probably the weirdest, hardest part, because I felt like I was basically like trying to invite people to my father's homecoming, you know? And that, and I also just have a lot of weird feelings. I know I'm the only person in the world that feels this way, but I have a lot of weird feelings about social media. So to kind of go into that space with it, that was the hard part. But the actual performance itself and everything rehearsing up to it, you know, I don't know. I think maybe just because those past 5 years had been so hard on myself and my mother and my family, his passing in some ways was a real relief, you know? It was like, it was an exhale. So to be able to kind of celebrate that and to honor him, I don't know. I was just able to do it. Saying it now and looking back on it, it's kind of one of those things is like, well, yeah, that is really heavy. I think maybe that just might be a characteristic of me. Maybe just some, I do well in the deep end of things, for better or for worse, you know? Yeah, I think that's probably what that is more so of. But, you know, I was just happy to be able to do it, you know? And then also, I mean, there was a lot of things, because it was like there was that aspect, but then there was also the aspect of like, I have never written anything this large before, and I hope it sounds good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So rehearsing it and hearing it, I was like, oh shit, it works. It works. It works. Okay, cool.
Tell us a bit about the name, Fill the Room with Light. Where did that come from?
So I was talking to my brother on the phone, and we were talking about our father, and he talked about how our father was such a light, and would, whenever he came into the room, he would fill it with his light. And I was like, there it is. That's it. That's the title. Fill the Room with Light. That's it. Because it was true, man. You know, before my dad got sick, and like I said, he was sick for a long time, even before those 5 years, before the stroke, he was already struggling quite, you know, he was keeping it to himself, but you know, there was some serious health issues. He was a pretty heavy smoker and a lot of other, you know, just health things. And before all that, man, when my dad walked into a room, it was like, boom, you know, like he had a real presence about him. You know, I feel like that shows up for me in my music. And then also, so that was one aspect of it. And then the other aspect of it was like, I told you, I had a 1-year-old while I was writing this music. And as I was writing it, I would have to get up basically at like 5 a.m. to write this music, because I knew that, you know, by 7 o'clock that Eli would be waking up. So I had
7 o'clock, man. You're lucky, Marcus.
I know.
Never got my kids asleep till 7 o'clock.
Listen, I know. I my son, knock on wood, has been killing it when it comes to sleep, man. He
obviously knew you had that big piece to write.
I think so. I think he was like, I'm gonna let you rest, Dad. I'm gonna let you rest. I know this is an important one. So so I knew I had to get up super early. And so as I was writing this piece, by the end of it, the sun would be up and the room would be filled with light. So as I was writing this piece, it was going from darkness into the light. Yeah. So that was another aspect of why I wanted to call it that.
When you performed it, did you make the audience aware of the backstory and and the history behind it?
I did.
Do you felt that that gave an extra acknowledgement from the room, like that knowing of where this was coming from?
I think so.
And what was the performance like, and what was the reception like?
The performance was great. It was great. So just like on a musical level, so wonderful to work with musicians at that level of professionalism. They came in and they knew their parts inside and out. They played their butts off. They played with so much passion. Like they're just, you know, they're a top level musician. So that first and foremost was like, whoa. And then Yeah, I mean, just to be able to experience my own music, to be able to sit in it and like go through these moments and just remembering like what was happening. Like there's one piece, there's like the second movement. I remember I was writing that during this time where the image that came to me as I was listening to it was like walking down the hallway of the nursing home and just the feeling of like not wanting to really be there, not being so exhausted, looking into the other rooms and seeing very sick people, and knowing that I, you know, walking to my father's room, like hearing that song, but it's like it has this like pulse to it. It's just got this like constant pulse, and I remember just how my body felt during those times. So that's one example of it. And then there's one moment at the end that I wrote, and I wrote this after he had passed. It's like the last, like, basically I take a solo at the end, and then there's like this last moment of me and the piano playing this part together. And for me, that was like, I put that in there to kind of represent how it felt to be in the room with him as he passed, because I was holding his hand and I felt the life leave his body, you know, and you know, that was such a gift, because it just let me know that there is something there. It was here and now it's gone, and you felt it, so there's no longer any denial about that. So that last, there's like a last little moment there that I just wrote that for that moment, just to kind of honor that moment. And yeah, I mean, then we played the piece, we ended, we sat in silence for maybe a good, I don't know, it felt like forever, but it was probably like 15 seconds or something. And then the crowd just erupted, you know, it just erupted and people were crying and clapping and screaming and, yeah, it was a boom, you know, it was a home run.
Did it feel like a catharsis for you performing it?
Yeah, I'd say so. You know, you kind of leave yourself. You know how it is when you're performing. You kind of leave yourself, but also at the same time, like the music was difficult. So I'm like really trying to also like I'm wearing, you know, I'm like, I want to enjoy the music, but I'm also like, I got to play these parts, you know, and this shit is kind of hard. So I need to be really focused right now. And so I was doing that. But yeah, it was also very cathartic for sure.
And did it leave you feeling like in the future, you'd like to revisit that piece?
I don't know, actually. You know, it may...
Or was it a statement in time, a moment in time?
I think it's a statement in time. That's kind of a piece. It's like, as beautiful as it is, I think it's good to leave it there and move on. Yeah, you know, I don't know if this is a piece that I want to play over and over and over, you know? So I guess that does kind of answer your question, Al. It is heavy. It was very heavy to do that.
There's a satisfaction, I'm sure, in knowing that it's up there now and it's out there. It's available to watch online. It's a statement. It's a moment in time that people can go to if they need that in their lives at that particular time.
Yeah. And I think that's probably just where we'll leave it. Yeah. It was heavy, you know, that was a heavy lift and a heavy time, you know, and I'm in a completely different time now.
Are you grateful for the fact that you have creativity and your music as an outlet to help you process and go through the loss of your dad?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, it's such a big part and it has been such a big part of my life and how I move through the world. I don't know where would I put all of that? How would I be able to move through all of that without it? You know, I'd have to find another way, and I'm sure I would, and people do. You don't have to be a musician to know how to grieve, or, you know, you don't have to be musician to be able to hold that sort of weight, but I'm so thankful for it. Yeah, I mean, I'm so thankful for the opportunity to be able to express myself, even, you know, even today, like, to get a chance to do this every day of my life and to teach other folks how to do it. It's amazing, man. It's amazing. What a gift.
So what does the future hold? How has your outlook on your music and your creativity changed from what you've been through and writing Fill the Room with Light? Have there been any changes? And yeah, what do you expect for the future?
It looks like the future holds more transformative experiences through sound. I just premiered a piece this past weekend, collecting stories of the Underground Railroad at a city here in Michigan called Ypsilanti. And we just did two nights of that, and the shows sold out, and the performances were just as potent as the premiere that I did for my father. And so I think the gift that I was given from him was to be able to really capture these moments and to share them for people. My plan is just to continue doing large works. I want to do more and more large works, more interesting, heartfelt, deep expressions. That's what's on the horizon for me. And yeah, I'm grateful for it. There's a magic to it that's happening that I do feel. I've had a friend of mine just tell me, you know, he was like, sometimes people can help you more on the other side than they can here. You know, it gets to a place where they can't really help you as like they would like to here. So they have to cross over to really be there for you. And I don't know, I feel that way, especially when I go into those really deep spaces with my music. There's so many very interesting moments that come up outside of the music, but just in my life, that are really beautiful gifts for myself and for the people around me, for my community. I'm seeing, it's like I go into these spaces and there's like a deep healing that happens for everyone. I'm not saying that wasn't there before, but I think the gift that my father gave me was that whole experience just gave me the awareness that it's happening. It's something I just need to continue to do. So that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Creativity and music are still that vessel for you to heal and to move forward and to grow.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, Marcus. It's been a true pleasure talking to you. I've taken a lot of really, really deep and powerful insights from what you've said, and I've resonated a lot with what you've said as well. Both of us having lost our dads, and how we can all find healing in whatever avenues of life we're looking for it. It's there for us if we want to grab it.
That's right. You know, you just gotta listen. You know, it's right. It's always right there in front of us. Yeah. You just gotta listen and be open to it. Music does heal. Keep some good. That's the one thing I'll say is, man, just keep some good music around. Whatever you got, keep it around. Keep it going. Keep that music happening. And I think you'll be surprised as to what will come from that.
Thanks, Marcus. Take care.
Take care, Al. Thank you.
For more information about Marcus and his music, head to his website, marcuselliottmusic.com. Please help by rating and subscribing to this podcast, as it will help to spread the word about Feels Like Healing. Thanks for listening.